This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Government-linked companies, or GLCs, are a controversial but omnipresent feature of Malaysia's corporate landscape. The pandemic and political upheavals of 2020 have put a spotlight on GLCs and the way that they're run. Joining me to discuss some of the stories on GLCs that have come out this year is Emmanuel Samaratisa, a journalist and executive editor with the online news portal The Vibes. Good to have you on the show, Emmanuel.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me.
The last time we spoke to you on Pressing Matters was back in 2018, when you were pioneering a one-man news platform called The Other. Where has the road taken you since then?
Ah, right. Well, it has taken me to a lot of interesting places. I mean, the blog is now defunct, simply because after that episode, I went on to join Focus Malaysia around August 2018. And yeah, so from there, I got into business and corporate reporting. And naturally, I leaned towards GLCs and the political economy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And your focus on corporate Malaysia and GLCs actually came at quite an opportune time in the wake of GE14, when there was a groundswell of support for greater reform of GLCs. As a reporter, did you find that it became easier to scrutinize on report on GLCs under Pakatan Harapan?
Let me just state this from the onset. I mean, the Pakatan Harapan experiment was a very interesting one, right? Because they came in with a reforms mandate, and they were promising politicians on the boards of major GLCs, and we saw that unfolding. So as a reporter, I think the one thing that was actually a good thing for someone like me was that some of these new GLC heads, they were really easily accessible. So for example, we interviewed the then Mara chairman, Hasnita Hashim, right? And it was a very easy thing to do. I mean, you just write in, you set up an interview, and she was very professional enough to actually take on the questions, you know, and she just knew how to do that. We didn't have the whole bureaucracy coming in. There were no delays. Things were just very smooth. Okay, so on that front, yes. And I mean, I think that's the same thing with Sharil and Kazana as well. And Ali Zakri of EPF. I did an interview with Ali Zakri with Focus, last year. It was an extensive piece, and the entire process was actually very, very easy to do. But the other aspect, of course, were issues like what I ran into earlier this year, right, with Kazana. And when we reported on the Malaysia Airlines deals, right, and so we had the police report and the legal letter asking us to stop writing about these things because, they were commercial in nature. I mean, that was what the reason was.
And just quickly, this was regarding the series of reports that you wrote with Focus Malaysia on the restructuring proposals for Malaysia Airlines in January, which cited internal memos from Kazana. And what was your justification for reporting on this?
For us, we stood our ground and we had to say that, look, we had to report this because it involved taxpayer money, you see, and anything that involves Malaysia Airlines, I mean, the stakeholders are the Malaysian people themselves. So, mm-hmm. So we had these issues there as well. So
right. So it was a mixed bag, but generally there was more openness to engage with the media and public when it came to GLCs and just being more transparent. Does the same spirit hold under the break at the national administration?
Right. Okay, so one comment that I usually get from market observers or even political analysts is that the current Perikatan Nasional is reverting to the BN model, especially in the run-up to GE14. I think one of the, I'm not sure memorable is the right word to use, but I think one of the most iconic moments of the BN government is that music video, Hebatkan Negaraku, right? With all the GLC leaders, and they were paying homage to BN and Najib because that was the slogan, right? And at that point in time, in my perspective and my opinion is that it actually encapsulated what the GLC leadership was all about. It was about very weak, subservient leadership, And when it came to GE14 and after Pakatan Harapan came in, we had a glimpse or actually a glimmer of a stronger leadership, certain direction. So, for example, Mara, which I mean, I'm not sure if people know, but it's actually the largest statutory body in the country. They have at least about a 25,000 strong workforce throughout, right? But you know, but you had this behemoth, and you had finally a group of people, corporates that were brought in under Pakatan Harapan, who actually had a vision and who wanted to steer the agency in a certain direction, right? Now you may debate that idea, but for the first time, you know, you had an idea of what they wanted to do, where did they want to go with this thing. And then when Sheraton happened, and then you have, you know, Perikatan Nasional, and you don't have that sense of mandates, of goals, you know. So you have all these overarching themes like, you know, the Bumiputra, corporate equity, but you don't exactly have milestones or goals that, you know, these agencies want to achieve. And so we are seeing a return of all these Hebat Kandagaraku fellows. We are seeing you know, corporates who are friendly towards then Prime Minister Najib Razak. You know, so you have these changes coming in, this political appointees. I mean, the Perikatan National Government was very they were very open about this, right? They were going to put in politicians and politically exposed corporates onto the board. So it's going back to BN days, and some say it might be worse because of certain characters that are on the boards of these GLCs.
Hmm. We'll discuss more on the political nature of GLCs in a bit, but I wanted to get your thoughts on what the basic parameters of a GLC are. Do you think there's enough public understanding on what actually constitutes a GLC?
Oh yeah, I think that's always been the debate about the definition of a GLC, right? That debate over definition, sometimes some people will say that, look, we're nitpicking, and as long as the government has a say in a certain entity, they're all GLCs, right? But, you know, there are always those nuances. So, for example, if you go to the MOF website, you have a list of companies where the MOF has a golden share in them. And you ask yourself, some of these companies that have a golden share in them, are they truly GLCs? For example, Westports. So, but then you have the government having a golden share in it because, you know, port is of national interest, right? But it's normally run in a very entrepreneurial way and manner. And you can see that there is no government, heavy government interference in the composition of the board and the leadership. But they have a golden share because a port is of national interest. Right?
For the noobs among us, can you explain what a golden share is?
So a golden share is this, it depends on the terms and conditions. But basically, it's a share whereby the government has a certain say in matters, especially in matters of strategic interest. Mm-hmm. So they may only have a nominal share in a company, but they might have varying degrees of powers.
Right. So it really varies from, I guess, company to company,
yes,
maybe
correct.
Even industry to industry, depending.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I see. So is a golden share what distinguishes a GLC from a non-GLC?
Yeah, so that is the big debate, right? So on that level, you have that debate. Do we identify all of them as GLCs? So even, for example, in the case of Axiata, for example, right? I'm not sure whether the government itself, the government via MOF has a golden share in Axiata, but you have Khazanah, which is the major shareholder of Axiata. So does that constitute a GLC in that sense? Because Axiata is a commercial company, but then you have Khazanah, which is the government's sovereign wealth fund, right? Which also technically represents MOF and the aspirations of the government. So how do we deal with these things? And this is just on a company level, yeah? It gets really complicated when you look at Khazanah and its peers. So you're looking at Khazanah, EPF, Quap, LTAT, these are what you call government-linked investment companies. And each of them have their own mandates and acts, you know, as laws and styles, you know. And then you have statutory bodies like Mara, for example. Mara is huge. Felda is huge. And they are statutory bodies, okay? And they also can invest. And so that's why in the case of Felda, you have FGV. Right. And in the case of Mara, you have its investment arm Pelaburan Mara. So it's just really complicated. It's just all over the place.
Right. And it seems to indicate that the government, I mean, it has its fingers in a lot of the country's economy, essentially.
Yes. So they have a finger. Yeah, they have their fingers in every, like, almost every pie, in many pies, actually.
Everywhere. I'm speaking to Emmanuel Samarathisa, executive editor at the news portal The Vibes. After these messages, we'll discuss the impact of political appointees to GLCs. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. This is Pressing Matters on the Morning Run. I'm Shazana, and I'm joined by Emmanuel Samarathisa, journalist and executive editor at the news portal The Vibes. We're discussing government-linked companies, or GLCs, and the governance issues that have come up over the past year. After the change of government in February, there came the typical changing of the guard at all the GLCs. And in hindsight, why do you think this caused so much consternation at the time, given that this was an expected course of events?
I think it's simply because, I mean, yes, you would expect in any scenario, right, even in a non-GLC kind of setting, you would expect, of course, you would hire people who you're comfortable with. Yeah, maybe for certain things, you would open it up to anyone who has the right skills, you know, and the right fit. On that level, it is expected that any government of the day would hire certain people they are comfortable with and they sort of have some visibility on, right? But I think this time around, it caused a lot of consternation because you have politicians, you see, on the board of all these GLCs. So you have lawmakers, members of parliament, right? And you had former Menteri Besars and all these guys coming back, and they are on really, really large GLCs that command near monopolistic advantages. I mean, that kind of visual effect of having these guys back, that's one thing. And on to all these huge and large agencies. I mean, I guess it's understandable why people would flip, you know, and why people are sort of worried and concerned, because, you know, it's back to the good old days of money politics and patronage and so on and so forth.
So GLCs occupy that nexus between money and politics, which makes them susceptible to being misused. A few months back, you wrote an article about concerns that observers have over GLCs that are being led by key politicians, particularly those that have large Bumiputra vendor programs. Could you break that down for us? How might these initiatives be abused?
When you have this Bumiputra vendor programs, the idea is you want to actually give it to the right people, the right entrepreneurs, the ones with the track record. But here's a case where you actually don't even need shareholders' approval for these vendor programs. So the worry is that, you know, because you're an UMNO warlord and you're an UMNO strongman, right? When it comes to all these vendor programs, you'd hive it off to all the friendly faces, right? And therefore neglecting what the entire mandate of the vendor program is supposed to be, which is supposed to supposedly nurture an entrepreneurial class from the Bumiputra community. So that is actually just one worry, you see? And it gets also a bit complicated because, for example, in the case of Mara, so Mara's current chairman is the Beaufort MP, Aziza Doon, but she's also, I think, the deputy chairman of the PAC. The PAC is the Public Accounts Committee, which is under the parliament. So, and the PAC has been making quite a number of headlines recently, right, for investigating and for inquiring into certain public projects. But now you have Mara, you have the deputy chairman, who's also the Mara chairman.
Right, there's a clear conflict of interest there, given that the PAC is supposed to, would be investigating or looking into Mara's accounts as a statutory body.
And speaking of Mara, we also have to understand, and we have to give credit to, I mean, the previous council, I mean, the council under Pakatan Harapan, because they were the ones who commissioned Ernst & Young to run a forensic report on the Melbourne land deals, right, which was leaked by the media recently. If it was not for them, I mean, we wouldn't have, I mean, sure, the report was leaked, and I think Mara has now also made an MACC report to actually investigate the findings of the report, right, because now it's all out in the open. But, you know, you have these things that are happening under Pakatan Harapan. So you have a sense of seriousness that was actually happening in these GLCs. But now it's all just out there hanging in the balance out for debate.
Right, right. Do you think that Pakatan Harapan missed opportunities for further reforms of the GLCs when they were in power? They did some. They brought in fresh blood into the management of some of the GLCs. But do you think that they could have done more in the 2 years they were at the helm?
I think, I guess if there's one thing we've learned from Pakatan Harapan's run in government, is that running government is no joke, right? And it is a very difficult thing to do. I think they have done whatever they could have done. And I think they didn't have the time to actually see through all the reforms. So, I mean, they were only in power for 22 months. And I think it was the inter-coalition infighting that actually took precedence over these things. And I think maybe these things really hampered any meaningful reforms, because, you know, when members of your own coalition are fighting amongst each other and jostling for power, these things would eat up, you know, into the bigger picture. So I guess that just overtook all of these things. And, you know, we sadly couldn't see the end of what Pakatan Harapan wanted to do, at least for a term, right? And therefore hold them really accountable to these things and to take them to task. Yeah. So if I may add, I mean, one thing about these GLC reforms that we look at on a state level, for example, some of these reforms weren't enacted. So Perak Corp, for example, which is a PN17 company, and PN17 is the term for financially distressed companies on the bursa. Perak Corp, under Pakatan Harapan, appointed politicians. So on a state level, we have some of these issues.
So again, a patchy record when it came to implementing reforms, where you had differences at the federal and state level. And what do you think is the appetite of the current government for GLC reforms? Given that it is an area of economic concern, which foreign investors are looking at, and it's getting a lot of attention at the moment, do you think the government is looking to pursue reforms?
Not anytime soon, because I think the government is bent on consolidating power, right? And they are more interested in GE15. So in that respect, I guess it's an elections play. So we can basically expect more opaque transactions and dealings. And I mean, if you look at some of the line items in the budget that have been passed, like, for example, aside from JASA, which or JCOM or whatever that is, you have items for Penggerak Community Negara, which is under the Housing and Local Ministry. And Penggerak Community is the pressure group of Bersatu, which is headed by the minister herself, Zuraida, and also backed by key Bersatu members like Azmin Ali and so on. So you have these things that have been passed, and this just signals that the government is more interested in tapping the structures of patronage and the nexus of business and politics, as opposed to really instituting meaningful reforms.
Right. Okay. Which makes the scrutiny of journalists like yourself even more important moving forward. On that note, thanks very much for your thoughts today, Emmanuel. We'll catch up with you again soon.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking to Emmanuel Samarathisa, Executive Editor at The Vibes. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, and then the Enterprise team takes you through the rest of the morning. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.